Hello, everybody. Good morning. Good morning from here, anyway. We are now dealing with program number 8 in the Rays and the Initiations, part 2, commentary. We're on page 347. We just finished a very important section in which we dealt with with a section of an esoteric catechism which dealt with the door of initiation and how one really had to have some kind of group consciousness going with one's brother hand in hand through that door to successfully pass the door. It's not really possible for the individual concerned about himself in an individual way to pass through the door of initiation. That is actually a figment of one's imagination, that particular door. We also discussed how in the Murrian days, one passed through the door of initiation singly. In Atlantean days, in groups of 7, or at least up to 7. And in Aryan days, larger groups more frequently passing. So the process of initiation today really is one of group initiation. And I did stop a little early because I wanted that section to stand by itself. And now we begin with the aspirant and the mysteries of initiation. It's a long section, actually. It's 209 pages. Well, that'll be some number of programs ahead. So let us now take up our first point in this section and see what is really meant by the hackneyed words, door of initiation, so often used without thought, without real understanding, and what constitutes the difference between the door which faces the disciple and that which confronts the master. For indeed, doors do confront us at every level of our development. The entering of the two doors of initiation here, a 19-page section. It is, of course, obvious to you that the word door is purely symbolic. I mean, it stands for an energy condition, does it not? An electrical condition. He's going to tell us about this. The interpretation given by the word, given to the word by the ordinary esoteric student and the orthodox theosophist, not the deeply thinking theosophist, is that of a point of entry. And the significance of it to him is that it offers an opportunity to pass to new experience and fresh revelation. Of course, this is to an extent true, but not wholly true, much of which is regarded by him as due reward for discipline and aspiration. There is where the deviation takes place. It's not a question of reward at all, isn't it? It's a question of reaching a certain stage of consciousness, because what we do understand is that the initiate is initiate before he is initiated. This is one of those important foundational realizations. So anyway, that which the ordinary esoteric student has and the orthodox theosophist, that is largely an interpretation based on wishful thinking and is of quite secondary importance. We see how Master D.K. is constantly expanding our point of view and decentralizing us at the same time. The door of initiation, the real meaning underlying the phrase, the door of initiation, is that of obstruction. Interesting. Of something that bars the way, of that which must be opened, of that which hides or stands between the aspirant and his objective. This is a much more exact significance and one much more useful for the aspirant to grasp. One cannot pass the door. One cannot get through the barrier. One's energy system is not fit until a certain level of achievement, not to be repulsed by the energy configuration which represents the door. So it is an obstruction, in a sense. It bars the way. It is that which contributes to the hermetic sealing of one stage of realization from another, one stage of initiation from another. So it it hides. It must be opened. It that which hides or stands between the aspirant and his objective. We are kept within an outer chamber until we are fit to enter into an inner chamber, relatively. And that inner chamber later turns out to be yet again but an outer chamber. The picture of man, of a man moving along the path of evolution until suddenly, one day, he stands before an open door, open door, notice that, through which he may joyously pass, has no faintest resemblance to the truth. And yet we do believe these things, which have no faint, even faint resemblance to the truth, because they please us and are satisfy our imagination and give us a sort of incentive by means of which we can naively continue on our way. So it has no faintest resemblance to the truth. The idea that a man, I guess Master DK's humor comes out here a little bit, the idea that a man of a nice disposition and possessing certain character developments, such as those portrayed in such books by Annie Besant as The Open Court and The Path of Discipleship, which condition the theosophical aspirants is exceedingly misleading. Oh, it's, well, we do our best, you know, as disciples, to write our books according to what we understand, and then only to have the master come along and say, well, erring in this respect. These books are very useful and should be carefully studied by the man upon the probationary path. So the place of their value is indicated by the master, but not so useful to the disciple. And we do see that the disciple actually is a person, a being of relatively high attainment. There is a difference between those on the path of probation, which generally can be considered as occurring before the first initiation, and those who are truly on the path of discipleship, occurring from the first initiation onward. At least that's one way of looking at it, although from another perspective, the path of probation can continue all the way up to the beginning of the path of accepted discipleship somewhere between the first and first and second initiation, and usually not before the middle period between those initiations has been reached. So they are very useful. He says they should be studied by the man upon the path of probation, but are not so useful to the disciple, for they lead him to put the emphasis in the wrong direction and to focus upon that which should have already been developed. The disciple has achieved the probationary attainments, and why should he re-emphasize those? That type of re-emphasis can become an obstacle. We have not forever to repeat that which we have already achieved, but have to venture towards future attainments, which are, of course, it's more difficult to do that. Naturally, the character development must be present and assumed to be stable, not just now and then, okay, in the man's equipment. These characteristics have, however, little bearing upon initiation and passing through the door on the path. So it's not the character developments, though necessary, which bear upon the ability to pass through that obstacle, that obstruction, that door upon the path. They are indicative of a point reached upon the path of evolution, considered in the large sense, the whole thing is the path of evolution, as a result of experiment, experience, and continuous expression. Those are the three mnemonic E's that we encountered earlier. Experiment, experience, and continuous expression and should be common to all aspirants who have reached the point of facing discipleship. I'm remembering in the old days, I joined the Arcane School in 1972. It seems a long time now, over 42 years ago. And I'm remembering that they offered training, discipleship training, training for discipleship. And I see that by that, you know, Master DK means a pretty high course of a study course of training. So these developments, they are unavoidable developments and connote simply the reaction of the personality to time and experience. In other words, to attain a relative degree of character, refinement, and elevation is a natural reaction of the personality to constant exposure in time to experience. It is eternally true that no one may pass through this door unless these character indications are developed. And this we may... I've heard disciples so often say, oh, the master doesn't, you know, doesn't care whether I drink, he doesn't care whether I indulge this or that, he has his mind on more important things, as if these character developments were not important. But it's a disciplined path, and certain foundational developments must be in place. So it is eternally true that no man may pass through this door unless these character indications are developed, maybe not fully, completely, wholly developed, but developed. But that is due to the fact that the aspirant has progressed to a certain stage of unfoldment and automatically now has a measure of self-control, of mental understanding and of purity. You know, the path of probation is in many ways the path of purification. And if you think about the very first initiation, it has everything to do with the purification of the physical vehicle. Those disciplines, however, should not be prolonged over much, or they prevent progress. They can, you know, it's a rotary motion. We continue to pay attention to the things we have achieved as if they are the most important, and do not develop those things we have not achieved. And here is a balancing statement that Tibetan makes. I would point out also that even the black magician possesses these qualities. This is a this is a sobering thought, isn't it? Because, you know, we all know that black magicians are not nice people, for they are the sine qua non of all magical art, both black and white. That is purification, self-control. We understand that the seventh ray, the major ray of magic, is a ray of self-control. And, of course, the black magician has to develop his mental understanding, and he does it often to an extent far greater than those upon the path of holiness, towards wholeness instead of separation. The black magician passes through the door of initiation as it opens twice for the first two initiations. And, you know, I've always found that amazing, because it means that the future black magician has stood before the great Lord, the Christ, two times, and maybe has been even stimulated in the direction of love. But it has, he has not fastened upon love as the important thing. He is overmuch focused upon what the concrete mind can give him, as it gave it to him as a kind of initiate of the earlier solar system. Now, you kind of wonder, did they come in already as initiates of a kind, and then maybe, you know, they did not stand before the Christ? This is another way of looking at it, because they may have been initiated at an earlier time, and the method may have been different, and it may not have been the Lord of Love who was officiating. And that, of course, that's kind of coming into my mind at this point, because they were said to be initiates of the previous solar system. And yet, you know, it is also possible for a man of this solar system to veer off, and then he would have stood before the Christ two times. Maybe less likely, because the third ray and the first ray would be less accentuated than they were in the earlier solar system. He passes through the door on the strength of his will and his character accomplishments. And because the group conscious aspect of the soul is active in him, as in his brother seeking affiliation of the Great White Lodge, group consciousness is not love. And this is so interesting. He has a certain group consciousness. He has strength of character. He can control himself. He has strength of will. The first and the third ray are so often involved with the Black Lodge to the absence of the second. The love aspect is, however, lacking in the Black Magician. At least the love aspect, as it is taught to those upon the path of holiness. Forget not that all is energy and there is nothing else. There is naught but energy, for God is life. We are told in the fifth of the laws of healing. Forget not that all is energy and there is nothing else. The energy which is an aspect of the soul, and which we call magnetic attraction, the group-building quality, he shares with the spiritual aspect. The energy which is an aspect of the soul, and which we call magnetic attraction, he shares with the spiritual aspirant. So, you know, basically what DK is telling us, that magnetic attraction is not love per se. The Black Magician, he is essentially group conscious, and though his motives are separative, his methods are those of the group, and these he can get only from the soul. Does this mean that he does he join with others of his kind cooperatively? Because it is as if he uses the group for individual ends. And we who imagine or are treading the path of holiness, we use ourselves as the individual for the sake of the group. It's entirely turned around. When one looks at opposition, one understands that when comparing the black and the white, there will be a great opposition and there will be great reversals. We do understand that those upon the left-hand path often deliberately and consciously reverse that which the white brother, the brother on the path of holiness, does. Okay. You see again another reason why the first and second initiations are not regarded by the Lodge of Masters as major initiations. They are initiations of the threshold. They are preparatory initiations. They are probationary initiations, and they do not guarantee, you know, they do not guarantee that the initiate will continue on the path of holiness, or the path which leads to the appreciation of wholeness with one identified as that whole. Only the third initiation is so regarded, because at that initiation the entire personality is flooded with energy coming from the spiritual triad via the sacrificed petals of the will and purpose aspect of the soul. This is so important. And I think, you know, we could see it. Matter of fact, I think, you know, so often I should have started this before I started talking, but okay, you know, there it is. Fellowship of Cosmic Fire. And we look at the AAB diagrams. And number 8 is the one that I so often look at, and I think we see here that the sacrifice petals are particularly stimulated by the will aspect of the spiritual triad, which is so close directly to the monad. It's the monad and the will aspect of the monad, particularly, which stimulates the atmic permanent atom and eventually coordinating atmic vehicle, and thus the sacrifice petals. But it does seem that the sacrifice petals, even though not completely illustrated as such here, are receiving stimulation from the spiritual triad as a whole. It is that triad which is the true ego. But the will and purpose aspect of the soul is stimulated particularly by Atma. But the triad as the full ego does stimulate that lower triad, which we can call the petals of the egoic lotus, three kinds of them. And the love petals of the, what are they? The synthesis petals of the egoic lotus are entirely triadal in nature. They are stimulated particularly by the Buddhic aspect of the spiritual triad. So it is possible to veer off. And as I said, maybe it's less likely that this will be done now because Christ is the head of the hierarchy and he has introduced for the first time this amazing quality of cosmic love, which probably overcomes the tendency towards mental pride, which would induce the veering off after the second initiation. Because, of course, a person can achieve spiritual intelligence and mental illumination at the second initiation and still not have developed sufficient love. You know, sometimes the sixth ray types, remember the sixth ray is the ruler of the second initiation, are told to, quote, love more your fellow men. So what initiation was in the old days and what it is now are somewhat different matters, and I'm always in a way correcting myself. I said that the black magician has stood before the Christ, but it's not so for those who are well-established black magicians. Perhaps those who now are treading that left-hand path, or who might, you know, have to overcome the tendency of love, and that's pretty severe. And they would have stood before the Christ. I imagine it's a fairly rare occurrence now. Anyway, to this element of sacrifice, to the spiritual triad. Remember, he rejects the triads. The black magician rejects the triad and therefore lands himself within the eighth sphere. He rejects the number eight. Eight is the number of the Christ, but eight is also the number of the eighth sphere, to which the black magicians are eventually consigned after the full scope of their failure is realized. So to this type of energy, triadal energy, the black magician is not responsive. And that, you know, the triadal energy comes in full flow at the third degree. And then comes the attempt to focus the consciousness within the spiritual triad. Really, one can then focus in the abstract mind, which is an aspect of the spiritual triad. One may not yet be completely focused in buddhi. So it's a question of non-responsiveness to energy, or the deliberate deflection of energy. To this type of energy, the black magician is not responsive. That is, to the energy of the spiritual triad and sacrifice. The sacrificial love of the soul is so important, and there we will see the black magician, the brother of the left-hand path, being non-responsive. He can and does respond to the knowledge, most ancient, probably from the first solar system, and hardly one, stored up in the knowledge petal of the souls. Stored up in the knowledge petals of the souls, he can appropriate this. He can appropriate and utilize the energy of attraction, erroneously called love by some students, that's the magnetic energy, stored up in the love petals of the soul, but he cannot respond to and use the energy of divine love, working out the divine plan, which controls all knowledge and converts it to wisdom, and which actuates and clarifies the motive which brings loving magnetic attraction, not just magnetic attraction, but loving magnetic attraction into action, in which we call true group consciousness. True group consciousness, not just responding to the group as the black magician does, but true group consciousness and true group cohesion. So, Atma, or spiritual will, is missing. The plan is formulated on the atmic plane, and apparently to this he cannot reach. It's not really spiritual will, spiritual sacrificial will that animates him. So let's repeat this. Just look at this again. He can and does respond to the knowledge, most ancient and hardly won, and we can even say perhaps from the first solar system, stored up in the knowledge petals of the soul. Now something's wrong here. This should be a semicolon or something. He can appropriate and utilize the energy of attraction, erroneously called love by some students, because it's attraction in the world of form, stored up in the love petals of the soul. Now, let's just say this is not necessarily love, but can be attraction in form and to form. But, and this is the big one, he cannot respond to and use the energy of divine love working out in the divine plan. Remember, formulated principally on the atmic plane and then gathering to it the other triadal qualities, which controls all knowledge and converts it into wisdom. And we remember that wisdom is of the monad and of the heart. There we go. And which actuates and clarifies the motive which brings loving magnetic attraction into action. Because it's possible to bring magnetic attraction, it is possible to bring magnetic attraction into action without a true motive, and which we call group love, true group consciousness and group cohesion. So he has a measure of these things, but the motive is incorrect and there is no sacrifice. So the motive is incorrect and there is no sacrificial impulse, and knowledge is used without wisdom. So this is how the brother on the left-hand path is operating. Of course, we know very little about these beings, and DK actually tells us not to speculate too much. He says it's profitless and dangerous, because I suppose we create some line of rapport along which we could be influenced. Of course, it's important to know what the enemy is thinking, and very definitely they are the enemy of the plan, but they are people of accomplishment, and they can use their attained achievements, which are stored in the causal body, knowledge and magnetism, instead of wisdom and true love. They can use these things. Masamori once, he talked about the heart center of the black magician being like a dried up mushroom, you know, something awful, some horrible image. And, you know, I think you can also see how if the true triadal energy is not entering, connected as it is with the monad and with the will of the planetary logos, that eventually eventually the egoic lotus would be in a rather disintegrating condition, because there would be no real nourishment for it. I suppose as long as Blavatsky seemed to emphasize any possibility of good remains in the man, maybe the solar angel will abide. But when that last drop of goodness is expunged, I suppose there's a cutting of the relationship of the solar angel to the man. Of course, these black brothers mostly individualized in the first solar system when the solar angel was not the method, the incoming solar angel, the intervention of the solar angel was not the method of individualization. So they individualized on their own. You kind of wonder, when they came to into this solar system, whether a solar angel was truly affixed to them. You kind of, because maybe they did not come in as, you know, they may have been initiates of the previous solar system, but maybe they had to prove their contrariness to the plan of the second solar system within this solar system. Maybe they were not fully brothers of the left-hand path when they entered, but simply initiates of the previous solar system. In that case, a solar angel could intervene and sort of attach itself to their process. So that's a question that we can't answer, but it's something to consider. Maybe they were worthy in a way, and only their continued perverted direction in this solar system would be what qualified them as a full black magician, member of the Black Lodge, and disqualified them from further association with a solar angel. You know, because we hear of the ways in which they are, so to speak, excommunicated. At one point, the higher self, the angel, the soul, cuts itself from the lower man, the personality, and then I suppose they're just left with their own egoic lotus, whatever they have attained there, and it goes into a condition of decay and destruction. And a further and worse type of excommunication or cutting occurs when the monad has to sever itself from all that it had attempted on the long pilgrimage, because the result of that attempt was badly out of tune with the intent of the planetary logos, of which the monad really is a part. So these are, you know, things that we are led to speculate upon, having to wait until later to confirm. It is at this point that the two ways of darkness and light become widely divergent. You know, and what is it hinted at here? Maybe they were noticeably divergent before, but not widely divergent. You kind of wonder, what is it that, is it noticeable? Is the danger noticeable that an individual will or could take the left-hand path after the second initiation? Can this be detected, even though he would stand before the initiator? Of course, as I seem to be beginning to say, the possibility of standing before that initiator might have taken place a long time ago, when love was not so emphasized as it is in more modern times, and with the Christ as the world teacher and the world savior. Until the third initiation is taken, glamour may control the attitude of those seeking to understand the life of a man upon the path. That's what we all are as candidates. We are those who are seeking to understand the life of the man who is really on the path and continues to tread the path, influenced by the Syrian regime of initiation, which begins in all earnest at the third degree, when a man can become what we might call a Syrian disciple. The black magician is never that. Until the third initiation is taken, glamour may control, may condition the attitude of those seeking to understand the life of a man upon the path, and they may mistake the spurious for the real. I mean, we who are trying to estimate an individual may mistake the spurious for the real, and they themselves, not having passed the temptations in the desert, that's where the failure occurs, the allegorical temptation of the desert, they may mistake the spurious for the real. They are, in a way, deeply in glamour. So until the, and maybe even, I don't know, even after the second degree, and the temptations in the desert, even after the temptations in the desert, glamour may still condition. But it seems to me that what, once one passes the temptations in the desert and sets one's face towards Jerusalem, towards the will aspect, the spirit aspect, allegorically, then there would be less likelihood of glamour controlling, but not until the third initiation is taken as the ancient authority of the personality defeated. The black magician leads a disciplined life, analogous to that of the spiritual aspect. He doesn't want to be overcome by lower forces. He wants to be the only thus, you know, only thus can he maintain control. He practices purity for his own safeguarding, so he's not swept away by lower forces and loses his sense of, loses his power to control, and thus loses his ability to fulfill his own unholy desires. He practices purity for his own safeguarding, and not in order that he may become a channel for the energy of light, and we can say here, emanating from the spiritual triad. He works with power, the power of magnetic attraction, which is loveless, we are seeing, with and in groups. He may gather groups around him, he may work with others who all have selfish intent, or he may work to victimize those who are in groups that do not have selfish intent. But just because a man is fascinating, attractive, interesting, and all the rest, and can draw others to him, doesn't mean that he has the power of love. And this is so important to realize. But he does this for his own selfish ends and for the fulfillment of his own ambitious purposes. You know, there are two signs, Capricorn and Scorpio, that are very much connected with the White Lodge, but also with the Black. And we read of Capricorn, let ambition rule and the door stand wide. And it is not the narrow door which leads to the true path of initiation. So interesting that Saturn and Mars, which can be so important in terms of inducting us into the spiritual hierarchy, can also be very useful to the black magician in cultivating the materialistic, aggressive, selfish consciousness. So he does this for his own selfish ends and for the fulfillment of his own ambitious purposes. So simply, you know, the story is that Hitler was a vegetarian. You know, he certainly is a man who was influenced by the Black Lodge. We know that. We cannot say he was a black magician because, you know, a black magician, we are told, cannot even really incarnate on the physical plane. The lowest level is the astral plane, some kind of, maybe the physical permanent atom has been destroyed, something of that nature. But he was certainly tending that way, and, you know, he had all of the prejudices which many vegetarians have. When people would, you know, drink broth, he would call it corpse tea. You know, I mean, so, you know, he was interested in purification in his own way and for his own purposes. I think he's a good example, and they all, you know, so many of them in that inner circle, they believed in reincarnation and had various estimations as to who they had been. All of that, you know, may be accurate, but certainly glamorous and self-inflating. So they were, in a way, treading the path of occultism, but not the path of spiritual occultism, and their we have to make a great distinction. So he doesn't necessarily work solo, you know, he works within groups, but for selfish purposes. And that's something that I've had to clarify in my own mind as well. The group work of its own kind of the black magician. But remember, oftentimes, you know, when we say, oh, that human being, he's a black magician, we can't really say that, because they wouldn't be incarnated on Earth now if they were. They are students of the Black Lodge. They are tending towards the Black Lodge. They are under the influence of the Black Lodge. They're treading the left-hand path. But the true black magician is not that. They are something more internal and much more dangerous. But at the third initiation, there comes to the true spiritual initiate, because, and notice, you know, watch DK's adjectives here. There are also non-spiritual initiates. There comes to the true spiritual initiate the revelation, which is the reward. A revelation in terms of, obviously, transfiguration is a revelation. The revelation, which is the reward of perseverance and purity, rightly motivated. He's so careful. Not just purity, but rightly motivated purity. It has to be rightly motivated. Purity alone is not sufficient. The revelation of the divine purpose, at least some of it, as the soul records it in terms of the hierarchical plan, though not yet in terms of the monad. Revelation of how the soul understands the divine plan. The monad understanding is far greater. To this purpose, and which is monadic purpose, the black magician is not reaching. And to the loving will of God, to use a trite Christian phrase, the black brother cannot respond. It's just a question of blindness and non-responsiveness, really. It shows you that if you emphasize something too much, you may build up such a fortress along a particular energy line that it will repel the entrance of higher energies which could recondition you. So, you know, there's been an undue emphasis and overemphasis upon intelligence, upon one aspect of divinity. It's the black brother is guilty of willful incompleteness. Doesn't want to take in the other aspects of divinity, certainly not the aspect of love, and certainly not divine sacrificial will. Will, yes, yes, the triumph of the will, you know, how the Nazis always emphasized that. And there was that documentary made in the early 30s. Gosh, what was her name? Lenny, I would get it wrong, Riefenschneider, or something like that. I'm not saying it right, but she was a filmmaker, and she made this very propagandistic film about the triumph of the will. It wasn't obviously the triumph of the loving will. It was just the hard, selfish, brutal will. Well, in any case, according to our goals, so will be our destiny. His aims are different. And here you have the true meaning of the oft-used and misunderstood phrase, the parting of the ways. And this leads to a still greater parting. In Judgment Day, in the, I guess, the middle of the fifth round, when finally the Black Lodge will be defeated, at least on our planet. There are still maybe other planets where that defeat has not occurred. One can think ahead to Mars and how those who are consigned to Mars after this Judgment Day will have their own battle with the Black Lodge. In many ways, the Black Lodge has used a very aggressive Martian modality on this planet. And it is, planet Mars is a planet which can induce many type of Black Lodge activities, aggression, cruelty, dominance, destruction, all those kinds of tendencies and efforts, as are evident today, as the sixth ray is going out of incarnation and there's a recrudescence of some of the worst aspects of the sixth ray operative now. I won't get into the particulars, but there are groups which, are doing horrible things, and they fly a black flag, and one would have to be blind not to see the connection to the Black Lodge and its cruel methods. However, apparently idealistically motivated. All right, but both groups of aspirants, the black and the white, stand before the door of initiation and take the needed steps to open it on two similar occasions. Well, you know, what is needed there? Spiritual intelligence and mental illumination. And one wonders whether is a full measure of love needed to open that door. Maybe not. Maybe the full love energy has to be developed later. I mean, we're used to understanding that Venus, Neptune, and Jupiter, which are planets of love, are very influential on the astral body before the second initiation, and that the astral body is brought into a condition of tranquility and reflects buddhi, love. But maybe not fully in the case of all. And as I've said, maybe a number of these types took the second initiation before the regime of love was so accentuated as it is in this era when the Christ, Lord Maitreya, is the representative of cosmic love and the Bodhisattva for 5,000 years. Both overcome glamour after the second initiation, so the second degree is not necessarily indication that one has overcome glamour and see their way clearly ahead. That's really one of the requirements for the fourth initiation, a very clear, open-eyed vision, and we can be fairly bewildered still before the second degree. But their goals emerge as widely different. One treads the broad way which leads ever deeper into matter and materialism, the primrose path, the broad path, into darkness and black power, the power of form, the power wielding, particularly, let's forget that, particularly, the power inherent in matter. The other leads to the straight and narrow way, to the razor-edged path, which leads into light and life. Obviously, immersion in matter, in form, and the ability to wield black power, that is, the power of the form and matter, does not lead into what in this second solar system we consider light and life. It doesn't lead into a life on the... we can't say that it doesn't lead into the cosmic ethers. It's possible to use any type of energy for one's own selfish purposes, because the true Black Lodge is found on the cosmic astral plane, which must mean they have gone beyond the cosmic physical. But in terms of the love content of the second solar system, we just are not going to find that in the Black Brother. Now, how they get from where they are now to the cosmic astral plane, there is a line of development about which the Tibetan really doesn't say much at all except that it exists. It's a line along the line of Mahat, and it takes them into high places. Does it take them to the cosmic mental plane? That I don't know. If it did, it could not take them into the higher levels of the cosmic mental plane where the soul, where the heart of the sun can be found, but only into the lower levels. And their true place is on the cosmic astral plane. The true brothers who wield cosmic evil have their center on the cosmic astral plane. So, and the fact that our particular solar logos is not yet a sacred solar logos maybe makes this possible. So the broad way, you know, as opposed to the narrow way, and that speaks of the difficulties that we have when we are treading the path of holiness. It is difficult, it is narrow, it is not leaving us room for deviation. And the brothers of the shadow, they can deviate all they want according to their will. They can deviate from the good law, they can deviate from the plan, they can deviate from the purpose, and they willfully do so. One group has never freed itself from the principles which governed the first solar system. So they've refused somehow to move on. And, you know, it's all, what can we say, you know, based on fear and the determination to preserve their prerogatives garnered in the first solar system. They were principles entirely related to matter and to substance. It seems like the personality solar system, I suppose, of the solar logos, but the personality does deal with matter and with substance, and it had a highly mental content, and were at that time and in that period so remote that the number of years of distance can be only stated in super astronomical figures, the conditioning factors for the initiation of the time. Was it similar to our initiations? Could they have achieved on those in that system what would mark them as a first or second degree initiate, or would that have only happened in our present solar system? Certain units of humanity then existent were so completely conditioned by these material principles and so deliberately unready. You know, in other words, I will not prepare myself. This is what is being said here, right? Deliberate unreadiness. I will not prepare myself. So deliberately unready for moving on to the comprehension of another set of principles, more expressive of the divine nature, still more expressive, a higher principle, that of love, that they remained fixed, remained a fixed and selfish material purpose, and a planned distortion of the divine will was intelligently created by them. This is a, you know, amazing type of sin, of deviation from the gift of divinity. It is wanting to retain one's power of a certain kind. You have here a hint as to the nature of evil and a clue to a part, the only a part, of the mystery to be noted in the statement that evil and good are reverse aspects of the same one reality. And this is one I always like to quote, and that evil is that good which we should have left behind. So, you know, as always, trying to fix this in my mind in such a way that it does not leave, I will make it really big. So I can find it, that evil is that good which we should have left behind. It doesn't do to forever emphasize what one is good at. You know, better one's own dharma than the dharma of another. The person may be having trouble fulfilling their own dharma, and we who have developed those same abilities could come along and fulfill it easily, but it's not our dharma, and we would just be emphasizing what we have achieved and not, like all must, struggle on into the future to develop new abilities. So evil and good are reverse aspects of the same one reality. There is only one reality, and the absolute deity is all things. And the absolute deity in manifestation is all things that can arise in the universe. But still, there is a program of purpose, and without following our own purpose at the beginning, we deviate, and we become agents of a counter force which goes against our own intentions. And then perhaps only later do we realize that and the wasted opportunity. Evil is that good which we should have left behind, passing on to greater and more inclusive good. And inclusivity, of course, is that at which the black magician fails. Forget not that the black magicians of today were the initiates of a previous solar system. So I guess, you know, I'm incorrect in saying that they stood before the Christ, although those who are being newly made black magicians could stand before the Christ. But those who are inveterate, you know, who are well established on this negative path, they were initiates of a previous time. When the door of initiation is ready to open for the third time, the parting of the ways takes place. This is such an instructive section. We all have to ponder it so we do not deviate under some false, oh, apparently high motive. Some follow selfish intention and the fixed determination to remain with the separative conditions of matter. And to others, the divine will is clearly impressed upon them. Remember from the atomic plane, and remember it is a sacrificial will. It intends to give all it has to others for their elevation and benefit. And to others, the divine will is clearly impressed upon them and becomes the motivating power in their lives. So we know how the Christ struggled with the divine will, and he was the best intended of us all. So they will not acquiesce to the divine will. And so people like ourselves, hopefully we will move on and be impressed by the divine will, and it will become the motivating power of our lives. It was under instructions from the Great White Lodge on Sirius that the door remains closed for the third time to the Dark Brothers. Evil as we understand it has absolutely no place on Sirius. The sunshine of the major sun. No evil can occur within the sunshine of the major sun. Sirius, we know, is a sacred solar logos, and our solar logos is not yet. He's still part of the lower quaternary of a greater cosmic logos, and you can't be part of the lower quaternary and be considered sacred. Well, all right, I won't get into that, but it's a bit like our Earth, part of a lower quaternary, and so there is a relationship between Sirius and our Sun, wherein the logos of Sirius is attempting to lift the logos of our Sun. It is rather a kind of relationship that is suggested by the relationship of Venus and our Earth, and then on a microcosmic level by the soul and the personality. So I'll tell you, friends, these are busy days for me, so I'm just going to say that this is the end of Rays and Initiation webinar commentary, program number 8, pages 347 to 351, and we will begin with Rays and Initiations webinar commentary, program 9, 351 and on. I'm so somehow enjoying doing this, just discussing it with you and discussing it with me, you know, talking to oneself. It is an opportunity to really patiently work with the Tibetan's material. And he's given so much here that is to open the door to the would be the bridging work to the new installment, which he will start in maybe even 11 or 10 years, or at least that's considered to be the starting point if we as humanity have not failed excessively and made ourselves unworthy of that reception. So our task is really the patient assimilation of what he has given until it thoroughly imbues us, and until we can be that and apply that and live that. And that really, that takes patient assimilation. Okay, friends, we'll move on to number 9 shortly, and you know, we've got lots of pages to go through here, and hopefully we will learn a lot more about the rays and initiations together, and maybe when we come back to the 14 rules for disciples and initiates, we'll be able to interpret them and live them even more fully. Okay, see you then. Bye-bye.